Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the Access Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Vinny Misana. Just wanted to do something a little different today. Everybody's bored, I'm bored, like the rest of the world. Today is Wednesday, May 27th, and it's a little frustrating knowing that not only did we miss out on the regular season and all the fun that comes along with that, but this is, you know, Memorial Day usually synonymous with baseball, so it hurts just a little bit more. You know, looking back and doing these, all the, you know, on this day segments gets me a little sentimental thinking about all the fun that playoff baseball is. You know, Memorial Day last year, I was at Hofstra for the Chaminade St. Anthony's championship game. Remember the year before that being at Old Westbury for the Nassau championship, the finals between Oceanside, Massapequa, and then Huanton Division right after that. And, you know, it's always so competitive, so much fun. And that's really what I miss the most about this. And I know everybody wants to get out on the field. And I think we're getting real close, though. I mean, it seems like just looking at the numbers, everything is heading in the right direction, at least in New York. Who knows what's going on with the other states, but I mean, we went through hell, and I think we're on the other side of it. I mean, you know, that we're in phase one, just starting up today, and hopefully we continue to progress in the right direction. I know that we're getting real close to baseball being out on the field on Long Island. Everybody's coming up with their plans to come back, and I mean, the good news is out of the four leagues that we were going to cover this year, looks like three of them will have some sort of a season. You know, the Hamptons League obviously had to cancel. They would have been starting up next week, I think. And I was really looking forward to the Hamptons League because I live out here in Southampton. We got a team in Southampton. A lot of the games are really close to here, so I was really, really counting on that being my baseball fix for the summer at least. And you know, I know that they had a really tough decision to make, and talking with Sandy, the president of the league, and basically, it just would have been impossible to get all the kids from around the country to come here. Even if they just limited it to just the Long Island kids, they still would have needed a field to play at, which is a problem being that the high schools are closed, so they wouldn't have had that as an option. You know, with the social distancing and the dugouts, which is something that every league is going to have to face. That really was, you know, the least of their problems. They had to get people here. They had to house them. I mean, those are the two biggest issues, getting everybody here and housing them. So I just think that if it was another, you know, other circumstances, like if everybody was already here, it would have been different, which is what benefits the other leagues that we partnered with. So the East Coast Youth, you know, we did a lot with them the last couple of years. Rich is a really good guy, does a great job running the league, mainly for younger kids. The league is like 7U to 14U. So we covered all their tournaments last year, all their leagues, the spring, the summer, and the fall. And Rich is dedicated to his craft. So I know that he is 100% set on getting the season underway as soon as they can, ensure that, you know, everybody will be safe and healthy on the field. I just read in his email yesterday, he said they're just waiting on Nassau County Executive and Town of Oyster Bay to give them the green light. So once that happens, we will have coverage of the East Coast Youth League. This summer, they're going to have a 22-game season, so we'll do a lot of that. Also, they have the 4th of July tournament, the Brian Moore Memorial Tournament, which is in the middle of July, and then Labor Day and Columbus Day are the other big tournaments. And that's also in addition to having a fall league. So we'll have that. The Blue Chip Collegiate League, which is similar to the Hamptons League, except 99% of the players are from Long Island. So I don't see any reason why they can't get that going. That should be at some point in middle to the end of the month. And then the other one is the Boys of Summer. You know, we've covered that the last few years. And I think they should be able to get going by the first week of July as well. It's just been tough for everybody. I mean, businesses are getting crushed. The kids are not getting their development in. The colleges are not getting to see the class of 2020 and the 2021. So it's going to even the playing field for a lot of the college programs because nobody has a heads up right now on who the top players are, who they need to be seeing, let alone making offers to them. So it's going to put everybody in a time crunch once they do get the green light to go back on the field. You know, a lot of the colleges aren't even able to host their own prospect camps, which usually they bank on for getting to see a lot of the top players because they'll invite them to come down and they get to see them on their campus, you know, play against their own guys or maybe, you know, even if they're just playing one another, you know, the 2020s playing one another, they're getting to see the kids perform at a high level. So that option is out the window for a lot of schools. I know they shelved their prospect camp. So it's going to put a lot of pressure on coaches to make the most out of their time, to be efficient in their evaluating. So basically they have July and August to see to fill out their rosters for the 2020. And a lot of the Division III schools, they don't recruit in advance. They really were counting on the 2020 high school season in order to get those players that fall between the cracks. And there's always players like that, whether it be, you know, because of grades or, you know, player that's coming off of an injury the previous year that was now healthy. So it makes it very difficult for the 2020 recruiting class to make a name for themselves in a short period of time. But that's, you know, the only saving grace is that everybody's in the same situation. There's really not an advantage. A lot of schools are still looking for players and a lot of kids are still looking for schools. So it puts everything on the same playing field. So we're doing our tournament Access Invitational July 23rd to 26th. It's going to be at the town of Brookhaven Fields. And really, it's going to be a hybrid of a tournament showcase because I think now more than ever, there's a need for colleges to see high school seniors and juniors. So we're going to do it more of a showcase format where it's going to be a controlled setting. You know, it's going to be a 9-inning game, no extra innings. You know, we're still going to figure out what we have to do in order to abide by the health protocols and stuff. But I think it's a good way to let the players show what they can do. It's not just going to be about walking home with the trophy. It's really going to be about, you know, getting the uncommitted players seen by the colleges. And I think it's a perfect time for the colleges to scout, to be at a field where there's going to be more than two teams on the field at the same time. Because the beauty of the town of Brookhaven Fields is there's four fields at some of those locations. And it just makes it very advantageous for colleges to check off multiple players from their list, as opposed to the high school season where you might sit in 40 minutes of traffic, sit at a field, and a kid gets intentionally walked three times. Or a pitcher, you know, pitches one inning of relief where you can't get that much intel on them. This is more suited for the college coach that needs a couple players for next year, and he can see, you know, two dozen at one time. So I'm looking forward to that. You know, we've had such bad luck with events in the past between, you know, the Battle of the Border in 2016 that was supposed to be at Dowling, and Dowling closing the day before that. I mean, last year, the showcase at Duck Stadium, and there was that random hurricane that hit central Suffolk the night before, and people lost their power and trees fell on their houses. That it just seems to be the latest in a long line of awful breaks that I've gotten. But I mean, everybody, like I said, everyone's kind of in the same boat. So it's just more, you know, it's just something that I laugh about, that I just can't catch a break sometimes when it comes to hosting these events. But, you know, so far there's no indication that we won't be able to play. I think that, like I said, things are trending in the right direction. So by the time you know, we get the green light, I think that'll give us plenty of time for the players to get ready and be at 100% by the time that tournament comes around in the end of July. Some of the things that we've been doing in the meantime, the best of the decade, the voting on Instagram. I mean, I'm a baseball nerd, so that kind of stuff always excites me when it comes to comparing historical seasons. We started doing that on May 1st, and it was a bracket that included the best players from 2010 to 2019. And then Nassau, the best of Nassau, played the best of Suffolk. So the best of Nassau was David Lederman, and the best of Suffolk was Aaron Gagliano from Connecticut. They went up against each other, and David Lederman came out on top. I mean, for those old enough to remember, he the Belmore JFK grad won the Diamond Award that year. He hit 609. I mean, I think, as far as I know, that's the highest single-season batting average in Long Island history. The only one that really came close was a couple years ago. Pete Theodorelis hit 574 for Comac in 2017. And that was the third highest, from what I understand. So David was more than deserving. Great kid. Signed with the Marlins after he graduated in 2017, and he got a little cup of coffee in the minor leagues. But so he was very deserving of that. You know, I really appreciate the interest in that from the fans, because try to do things that's going to be engaging and going to be topic of conversation. And just looking at the total number of voters, I mean, it impressed me. It shows that people were enjoying it. I'll just say that. And I got some people in my messages asking, when am I going to do the Catholic League? And so I decided to do that. We started last Monday. I think it was, not this Monday, the week before that. And right now it's in the final four. So if you want to check it out on our Instagram, by the time you listen to this, we'll probably be well into the voting. I'm going to leave it open until midnight tonight. And we're in the final four of that. We have Will Shaw from St. John the Baptist up against Thomas Rulis from Chaminade, 2011 grad, went to Dartmouth, had a great career. And that's the fun of this. It's comparing players from different time periods. So obviously things change. And I know, you know, they not exactly on the same playing field, because maybe they were facing a different caliber of opponents and stuff. But I mean, that's what this stuff is. It's really just for fun to compare. You know, Thomas had a great career for himself, so it's not to mitigate anything that he accomplished after graduating high school. But it's always good to just put two great players together and just to, you know, compare and contrast. And right now, at the time of the voting, as I'm recording this, Rulis is actually in the lead, but I expect Shaw to get a pretty good push from the St. John the Baptist contingency. And then the other two players in it, we have Kevin Courtney from St. John the Baptist, 2010 grad, and we have him going up against Logan O'Hoppe, 2018 grad from St. John the Baptist. And on paper, you know, you would think Logan would run away with it with the name recognition alone, but Kevin hit 515 in 2010 and obviously went on to have an outstanding career at Stony Brook, graduated in 2014, part of the great World Series run of 2012. And I actually had him on Instagram Live last week talking about that team. So if you guys want to check that out, head over to our Instagram. He had great insight just talking about all the different trials and tribulations of his tenure at Stony Brook. And I thought it was really, really insightful, because, and it's a pretty good segue now talking about the Instagram Live interviews that we've been doing. I just think it's great to like peel back the curtain on people. You know, it's a lot different than just comparing numbers. You know, like, I think that's fun to do, the best of the decade, but I would much rather hear the stories behind the season that made it great. You know, talking about what makes them tick, you know, what motivated them, any obstacles that they overcame along the way. And not everybody experiences, you know, personal loss or tragedy or stuff, but everybody has a story. Everybody has dealt with some sort of obstacle along the way. Some players had rotator cuff surgery and had to rehab and miss a year and, you know, wind up coming back and having the best year of their life. Some players lose a family member and, you know, go to a dark place emotionally and then find inspiration in that and wind up putting up a great season. You know, some players, they don't experience anything when they're young, and then it happens later on in life, and maybe they're not as equipped to handle adversity at an older age because they hadn't experienced it when they were younger. So that's why I like doing the interviews, is hearing the story behind the person. And I always try to shoot for at least 30 minutes because I don't want it to be like a post-game interview where they're spitting out cliches and they're just looking to get on the bus and celebrate with their friends. This is more of a extended, you know, long-form interview where we're hearing everything about the person. You know, I want them to brag if possible. It's not about the team always. In this instance, I just want them to talk about what motivates them. You know, what are some tactics to get out of a slump? What does it feel like when you're on a hot streak? You know, there's some hitters that when they have a season hit 500, feels like they could do no wrong. You know, you look at what EJ Cumbo did last year for NYIT, you know, going to the College World Series, hitting 450 against premier pitching in the country. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I want to hear about. You know, it's cool to look at the record books and look at the numbers, but I think sometimes the numbers don't tell the whole story. So it's really cool to just talk to them about what was going through their mind in the day-to-day, if they had a new coaching staff like Tech did. You know, how was the coach able to galvanize the unit? How was he able to overcome the losing mentality of the previous regime? How were they able to learn the strengths and the weaknesses of the players in such a short period of time? That's the kind of stuff that interests me as a journalist. So that's why I continue to do that. We've done about 40 interviews over the last 2 months or so. You know, I'm looking at the list right now. We have people of all backgrounds, you know, guys with major league experience, like Frank Catalanato, guys that are on their way up through the minor leagues right now, like Kyle Young, have coaches in the minor leagues, like Tim Gibbons, have Andrew Mysiadzic. I have him tonight. He's a minor leaguer in the Cleveland Indians system. And then on Friday, our biggest name yet, Louis Tiant, who pitched for the Red Sox in the 70s and 80s on the famous 1975 Red Sox team that was in the World Series. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's in 2 days. We also had Luis Severino last Sunday. That was cool, talking to the Yankee right-handed pitcher. He's definitely the most recognizable name that we've had, but didn't really have as much time with him. Only got to ask a few questions. Definitely would have liked to have a half hour or more to speak with him. And then the coaches, you know, guys like Steve DeCaro from Mattituck. I think he's somebody that has had such an impact in his community and coaches and players that he coached at Mattituck that he deserved his own interview, even though he's retired for the last 2 years. Steve is one of the most beloved coaches. He's one of those guys that when you talk to his former players about him, everybody has a story and love to hear from him. So when I had asked him to do it, I didn't know if he was going to be interested because he hasn't coached in the last 2 years. So I was thrilled when he responded that he would like to do it. And it ended up being probably the best interview yet. It was an hour long and he went into all the backstories, you know, winning the state championship in 2015, you know, coaching at the one of the coldest fields on Long Island. If you've ever been to Mattituck, you know what I'm talking about. And also him coming over from division, learning from legendary Doug Robbins and just instilling that mentality that division has had over the last, you know, 30 years and bringing that over to Mattituck. And he built up a powerhouse of a program. So the Instagram Live interviews have been going very well. I really enjoy it. We're probably going to do it for about another week because at that point, you know, the baseball season will hopefully be getting underway. And then obviously people aren't going to be as interested in tuning into nightly interviews when they want to see actual baseball content. And I don't blame them. You know, if I had my druthers, we would be covering the county championships this weekend, not doing, you know, sit down interviews every night at 7 o'clock. But we got to make the best of it right now. And let me see what else I have written down here. So got the league coverage is going to be coming back, Instagram Live, the best of the decade. Also going to start up doing some baseball trivia and probably doing one a week. Have a couple coaches that know a lot about MLB history. I think that will be fun. I'm going to try to get some interesting characters on there, guys that are going to get some laughs out of the audience, and I think that will be a hit. I mean, who knows? Maybe that will end up being something we continue all through the season if it goes well. Got to look, wait to see what the feedback is like. But my vision of it is that it will be a hit just because of the characters that we're going to have running the show. And then lastly, I mean, Major League Baseball in the news, of course, for all the wrong reasons. They just seem to not be able to get out of their own way. They've been negotiating, the players' union and the owners, for the last few weeks, it seems like, and just not coming to an agreement. And looking at the tweet from Jeff Passan that he put out last night, obviously Jeff knows his stuff. He's plugged in. I mean, it's a slap in the face what they're offering the players. He tweeted out that a player that was set to make $563,500 this year, which is the league minimum, would make $262,000. For a player that was set to make $35 million, which is only a couple of them, I think, Mike Trout, Gerrit Cole, Clayton Kershaw, they would make $7.8 million this year. And I know that everybody wants to see baseball back and they want to complain that the players are, you know, haggling over millions while 40 million Americans are out of work. But the reality is they're just not going to work for a fraction of what they agreed. That's why we have a players association. So I understand the sentiment. People want to see baseball. I do too. It's just not realistic to expect that players are going to work for 20% of what they agreed to work for, or half of it if in the case of the guys making the major league minimum. It's just not fair to them, and it's not fair that this kind of stuff leaks into the media in order to paint the players as the bad guys. I mean, Marcus Stroman had a tweet yesterday saying that it doesn't look promising. You know, I think when people see that, they kind of jump to conclusions. But knowing Marcus, I know that that's probably what he was feeling at that time. I don't think that he has any sort of, you know, fortune-telling ability. I don't think he's, I don't even know if he fully meant that. I think that that's what he was feeling at the time. You know, I think a lot of people are feeling that when they see bad news going on. But the reality is Passan is as tuned in as it gets. And so is Jared Diamond from the Wall Street Journal. And those are two guys that are very realistic. And they both seem to be preaching that it's early on in the negotiations, one. And two, the players and the owners alike have too much to lose by not coming to an agreement eventually. I fully think that they will come to an agreement. I just wish they would do it without all the negativity that gets leaked into the press. You know, that gets leaked to the fans, because what it does is it creates a divisive nature. It makes people take sides, and ultimately it's just bad press for the game, because right now NHL is coming to an agreement on returning to play. The NBA looks like they're going to come to an agreement. And college football looks like it's going to have a season. The NFL looks like it's not even going to be affected. They've already had their draft. They've had free agency. They're doing their virtual training camp. I mean, they had their schedule release. So NFL just continues to plow along. Nothing stops them, it seems like. So I think that all those sports are going to come back, and baseball would be an awful, awful look if they came to an agreement on the health protocol and not the economics of the game. I just think that eventually they're going to have to, someone will have to bend. They're going to have to come to a compromise on it. Otherwise, they're going to risk losing a lot of goodwill and a lot of trust from the fans, and rightfully so. And I think it would be worse than 94. And this is just 2020. I mean, next year the CBA is going to be up. A lot of people already thought there was going to be a strike, a work stoppage because of the differences between the union and the Players Association when it comes to service time and how they're able to manipulate service time for players. I mean, that's been going on for a while now with players like Chris Bryan, guys that were deserving to be on opening day rosters that just weren't because they can save a year of arbitration and ultimately free agency. So that's looming next year. I mean, I hate to be gloom and doom, but like they're fundamentally at odds over the service time stuff, which was already going to be a problem. And now you factor in, you know, the pandemic get back to play protocol, and now that poses another issue for next year. So I really, really, really hope that they come to an agreement, and I hope it happens soon, because the thought of 4th of July opening day, I think, is really exciting. And I think it's what the country needs. It needs good news. It needs something to rally behind. You know, baseball, whether people agree or not, is an American institution. It's a part of the fabric of the country. And when baseball comes back, if and when baseball comes back, there will be a feeling that we're healing and that things are back to normal. So if that doesn't happen, it's going to have adverse effects, and it's probably going to hurt the economy because it's less jobs at the stadium, less people spending money at the stadiums. It just would not be a good look. So let's just keep our fingers crossed, hope that Jeff Passan's right. And, you know, after that, I mean, right around that time, we should be getting Long Island baseball as well. So, guys, thanks for tuning in. This was more of like a therapy for me and a State of the Union address, just to see where we're at, you know, with this pandemic. We're 70 days into quarantine, and we're finally in phase one. So we are finally on the other side of this, I think.